Mr. Russ Hertzberg, Vice President of Technology Solutions for SoftServe, with general management responsibility for technology solution initiatives in SaaS, DevOps, mobility, big data, security, and content management. He's got over 15 years of continuous experience in executive and entrepreneurial product ownership roles from cloud computing, software platforms, and network systems. From 97 to 2000, he developed, managed, and grew a successful commercial managed hosting service for Scantron. From 03 to 07, he was operating Angel in one of the first SaaS providers of on-demand document and data sites. From 2008 to 11, he provided consulting services for a series of cloud computing projects, including the Work Express Pass, the M86 email and web security cloud, and the Aria Systems SaaS billing and subscription management platform. So a round of applause for Russ Hertzberg.
I like to walk around. My sitting down kind of stifles me a little bit, so hopefully you guys won't mind this change of pace and the way the presentation is delivered. So this is a presentation I developed in September on a couple of flights, and I gave it once in Kiev in the Ukraine. It's the second time I've given it. And this event, and I think the attendance at this event and at several events, and what goes on in the investment community and in the software industry should give you an impression by now that the battle for cloud platforms is a very, very, very significant, important, strategic determinant of the medium and long-term success of a lot of companies in our industry. You can see that in the acquisitions that are going on and the types of investments that are being made, and in the activities of some of the vendors that I'm going to look at right here. So what I'm actually going to do here in this presentation is compare 7 or 8 of the most popular cloud platforms. So I've actually developed a set of criteria, and very much like Chris, I start out with some definition of terminology. At SoftServe, I have really two roles very quickly. One is sales and marketing of our architecture team. We have about 35 architects, everything from data warehouse experts to system architects to security architects to infrastructure operations and DevOps gurus. And I have sales and marketing responsibility for them and for the intellectual property that we build as a company. We build accelerators and enhancers to build cloud solutions better and faster. So that's what my day job role is. But that's about it on SoftServe. I do think we can help a lot of people here at this show, but that's really not the purpose of my presentation. I want to talk about the cloud platform environment. So I'm going to go over the terminology first, and then, of course, I want to look at what a major analyst firm says about cloud platforms, how they see that market evolving. And then I've done some research here, kind of got a more independent view of the cloud platform market, who the players are, what their strengths and weaknesses are. After that, I want to talk a little bit about each one of the major players and talk to you about some emerging companies. There is some significant investment activity going on in cloud platforms right now. It's gigantic in scope and scale. And kind of bring it to people's attention, I think it will give you an impression of how big the stakes actually are in this area for cloud platforms. And then I'll talk a little bit about how data is moving in the cloud computing model right now and where different data types are likely to reside by the different structures that you can find in cloud computing. And the good thing about my presentation is I by and large stick to the NIST definitions pretty closely, not completely the way you did it, but very closely. I did not get to the hub and spoke model. I just ran out of time, but that'll be for the next version of this. And I have a case study, a very specific case study that we've done as a company at SoftServe to show you how you can leverage a cloud platform to deliver a next generation kind of a solution. It's something that frankly went live about a week ago, actually. Something that was worked on throughout 2013, a very new stuff, leveraging a lot of new cloud platform technology. So let's start with the terminology. Well, what is a cloud platform? And what's a public and what's a private cloud? So I'm going to come up with a real simple definition. A cloud platform are integrated tools and services to build and run cloud applications. What is a public cloud? A public cloud is a cloud platform consumed on demand from the public internet. Anybody can point a browser or even a smart mobile device at a public cloud and start to use its services and consume it. A private cloud is a cloud platform used inside a firewall. It has limited secure access. There's a subset of people, in an enterprise, maybe in a collection of enterprises, maybe it's a private cloud that's a type of exchange, right? And it's private. Only certain people are granted access, and security is set up so that there are limitations on who can access that cloud. So that's, you know, three terms. And then we get to the next set of terms, which has been adopted pretty widely in the industry. I think we're getting some good convergence around understanding of these terms. I'm a little bit even more specific. Infrastructure as a service, what is it? Servers, storage, switches, routers, load balancers, security devices, virtualization. That's what infrastructure as a service is. When it comes to virtualization, we've been virtualizing servers for a while, right? In the next 5 years, you're going to see the virtualization of switching, routing, load balancing, and security appliances. Absolutely, positively, this is software-defined networking. It will create another wave of innovation in cloud computing and in other areas as well, in systems and network management. We're early on in our own work on software-defined networking, but expect significant changes in infrastructure as a service as a result of SDN. And if you follow, again, the investment community, and you look at the portfolio of around, there's about 6 to 12 SDN startups and early stage companies being acquired for $300 million that haven't even shipped an SDN solution yet, you'll see that this is a significant area. Platform as a service. Platform as a service, simple definition, developer tools for building and deploying cloud applications. All kinds of developer tools, all kinds of middleware as well. I think some people see platform as a service more strictly as a pure development environment. I see it much more broadly. I see it as a significant amount of middleware that you see the major players, especially Amazon, investing heavily in. Finally, software as a service is the business and consumer applications that are delivered on cloud platforms. So there's some working definitions. So Forrester, in Q2 2013, came out with their view of what's going on in these three categories. So their view is that the boundaries are blurring, okay? So they see infrastructure as a service vendors moving up into PaaS with application containers, application services, application lifecycle management, development tools. They see SaaS vendors moving down into that area as well with APIs, with integrations, with deep customization. This is their view, a blending or a blurring of these distinctions. Interesting view. I guess my approach is to get a little bit more specific than that. So this is the sort of the independent research that I and we did at SoftServe, looking at major cloud platforms. Who are the top players? And you know, I had to think pretty hard about this. Honestly, I have two versions of this slide. These are the first five in my mind. You'll see I have another slide with another three. There are some people that you might want on there that aren't on there. Some people would argue Apple shouldn't be on there. I'm going to tell you that Apple desperately needs to be on here, and I'll explain why here shortly. Anyway, so what I looked at was for infrastructure as a service, some major capabilities, compute resources, big data platforms. I had a great chat with a guy from Akamai yesterday, and for sure, CDNs are going to become part of cloud platforms. And that puts a company like Akamai in a very, very interesting position relative to all of this. But you can see from the chart already that content delivery network services are already being delivered by three of the major cloud platforms. So that creates a very interesting thing to watch out, how that evolves, especially with folks like Akamai. And then there are some other important CDN platforms. Some of them have been merged into telecom service providers. Some of them are still independent. So that's going to be an interesting game there. Cloud API storage, archiving backup, direct virtual machine storage, monitoring, service levels and monitoring are a big, big important thing with cloud platforms, especially for CIOs who are starting to invest IT budgets into the cloud. Deployment automation, collection management, these are all functions of infrastructure as a service, the last two being specifically in the area of DevOps or infrastructure operations. When you get into the platform as a service, or what I'll call the middleware services for cloud platforms, It's actually a potentially very, very long list of services that you're starting to see there. Basic application development tools, environments, obviously, hosted relational databases, data warehousing services. Amazon's made another huge, huge breakthrough on the price performance front with Redshift. They, again, have kind of stepped up and led the way with a columnar data warehousing technology that's dropped the price point on data warehousing from maybe around, I don't know, 20 to 40K a terabyte to like 1 to 5K a terabyte. Just boom, just like that. That just happened in Q1 and Q2 of this year. NoSQL services in the cloud as well, in this platform as a service or application platform area. In-memory caching is important, especially for analytics and big data applications. You know, if you want to crunch a terabyte, say, of data in memory in real time to do some good analytics on it from a huge big data store of maybe 100 terabytes, the ability to put maybe a terabyte of that into in-memory to do analytics on it can give you some real-time insight. That kind of service in the cloud is now available, and other startups working on new offerings in that area that we've been working with at SoftServe. And then other services you see down here, again, I put other one and other two because there are so many other middleware services. When I show you the slide of what's available in AWS right now, in terms of different middleware services on their platform to help you build applications, it's extensive and it's expanding, and it's why they have people like Netflix on their platform. And that's not even to mention all the third-party services that are available in Amazon as AMIs, as Amazon Machine Images. If you're an ISV today, I don't see how you can get out there in the real world without producing a Xen virtualized image of your software and offering it in AWS as an AMI. It's almost de rigueur. You've got to be there. In the application marketplace, again, these players are either offering marketplaces or they're providing major applications themselves. So the offers of marketplaces, of course, are the top three: Amazon, Google, and Microsoft. And Google and Microsoft in particular have been extremely successful with Play, and Apple has been extremely successful with the App Store. You see that Amazon has probably been the one who's had less success in this particular area. But it's very interesting what they're all doing in the area of online marketplaces. And of course, you know, when you look at a player like Google, Google dominates in some respects the SaaS application landscape through the combination of search and some of their big acquisitions. And the huge investment advantage they have with things like Maps, right? But Salesforce is, of course, the other major player in that space. Big, big player, especially in the business space, right? The B2B SaaS application space. Who are the monsters in that space? Well, the number one monster is Salesforce. Okay, so let's kind of break this down. Instead of doing that simplistic, I would say, Forrester view, I'm going to give you a much more granular view now of what I think is really going on. So I start out with PaaS, and I want to look at two dimensions: market share in this cloud platform arena and richness of functionality. So the first thing I put up there is platform as a service, and of course, with the most market share and the richest function is Amazon, AWS. Microsoft still has a huge opportunity to put pressure on everybody because they're the leading provider of tools and services for ISVs. They have a huge amount of developer mind share. You go to any Microsoft developers conference, you'll see that in spades. You know, I've been to various developer conferences over the years, but Microsoft turns out the tens of thousands of developers. You even look within our company. We have 2,700 software engineers. We have to staff a project fast. Guess what? We can staff C#.NET projects faster than anything else. That just is what it is, right? So Microsoft has to translate that advantage into the cloud platform and into the platform as a service space. So they have that opportunity. That's I think, one of their big challenges. Salesforce is a major player in this space as well. They've gone about it two ways. One is they exposed their own development environment. It's called Force. Then they did a major acquisition of a company that was originally one of the top platforms for Ruby development in the cloud called Heroku. It was an acquisition they did about 2 years ago. Google is coming on in this space. You know, Google has Google App, right? Google App is a platform, and Google can expose tons and tons and tons of middleware in their cloud platform, and they obviously can be a big player in this space too. And they've been available in this environment for a while. Infrastructure as a service, the huge first mover advantage, of course, goes to Amazon. Amazon continues to be the most aggressive pricing provider in this space. I learned something new from Raza Razul yesterday. You know, very interesting what I learned about the B2C space there, that Amazon is kind of holding the line on 1 hour, right, as their metric of time to rent a compute instance. And Google's jumped in at, you can rent for 10 minutes. And Azure is being even more aggressive with being willing to rent you a 1 minute time slot for an instance. That's pretty interesting set of metrics to compare right now. But I think Raza's big pitch is, because Amazon is so strong in so many other areas, what he really wants is he wants 1 minute of Amazon instances. And the other thing that he absolutely wants is he doesn't want instances spun up at a random period of time. And there's a randomness, for those of you who have used Amazon, there's a randomness to how soon your virtual machine comes up that's a little bit unsettling. And you know, you might have, once they're up, you know, if you have a service that needs to run all the time, you don't care about that. On the other hand, if you really are using that on-demand model where you have spikes in traffic and you want to spin up instances and then tear them down and use metrics like 2 minutes of compute instance time or 36 minutes of compute instance time, you can't live with a variable spin-up time. It's just not, it doesn't work in the model. So anyways, in infrastructure as a service here, you see Amazon with the price performance leadership. Google has the capacity and the scale to compete with Amazon on price for infrastructure if they choose to do so. And they're the only one with the capacity and the scale to compete with them. Microsoft, maybe so. Certainly Salesforce. And you know, it's interesting about Apple, because I took the data point from your slide, I combined it with some other internal information I have about what Apple has tried to do and where they really are, and they aren't where they need to be, and they're struggling. You know, that's the best way to describe it, and it's sort of symptomatic of what Apple's been going through as a company almost for my entire time in the industry. They leap ahead in certain areas, and they have a vision of their company that sometimes the competition in the market just crushes. And if the vision of their company is that they're kind of a device company, they're about to get crushed. You know, that's kind of my take on it. And here's why, okay? Because down here, if you look at them in the software as a service and software e-tail space, they've got a great store because people love their devices, but they basically have no position in middleware and platform as a service. And they've struggled to ramp up running their own infrastructure operations. And basically, they've come out with a set of functions, photo sharing, cloud backup, that are very limited in scope, that are device-centric, and they don't sort of buy into the notion that cloud platform is the strategic future of any major integrated market-leading computing communications software company. I don't think they buy it yet because they haven't done the kind of acquisitions that would get them there faster. I mean, you look at a company like Joyent in Silicon Valley. It's perfect for them. It's perfect for them. So I'm not sure what their thinking is at the strategic level, but I'm a critic of Apple's underinvestment in cloud platforms. I'm an absolute critic, and I love Apple devices. I have an iPad. I love my iPad. I have a MacBook. I love it. So I love their devices, but I'm a critic of their underinvestment in cloud platforms. Here are the other players to watch. Red Hat has made a significant investment in a platform called OpenShift. It's got a very interesting set of new concepts on compute resources. They describe them as gears. They've got some advanced deployment automation technology. They're working with a third party on the CDN portion. Most of their investment is in the middleware and platform as a service area. You can build these application development services as cartridges, plug cartridges into gears. You can host MySQL and Postgres. They have a Mongo service as well. They have in-memory caching, and they have a set of other services as well. But the really big story on the other players to watch is, of course, what's going on with this company called Pivotal, where Paul Moritz is the CEO, which is basically an interesting mix of investors and technologies. Greenplum, which is VMware's major acquisition in big data, was sort of donated into this company. GE put a ton of money in there. And I've heard that the amount invested in Pivotal is nearly $1 billion, okay? So this is like a huge, huge, huge investment to try to create another cloud platform company. So we'll watch as this company comes out with services. Obviously, they're already selling the Greenplum and the Redis services. You can see that they're being very aggressive in the big data part of the cloud platform market. Very interesting. If you are into data science at all and functional programming, you know that a lot of folks are using Scala to build some of the more sophisticated predictive analytics applications that are working on big data. So the Pivotal platform will continue to evolve and drive Scala as an environment. And then lastly, I didn't want to ignore them, but Oracle, you know, kind of late and after trying to say it didn't matter, decided it did matter. And so Oracle is trying to create a cloud platform as well. And they've essentially done that with several big acquisitions. And so they have talent management, they have right now, they have human capital management. They have also acquired huge, huge amounts of land and are constructing gigantic data centers in Utah. So they do plan to be in the infrastructure space as well. All right, I don't have much time left, so I'm going to have to zoom through these. Why is Amazon the leader? Well, they have cost leadership, they have scale leadership, and if you look at what they're doing in the middleware layer, it's fairly unbelievable. And I'm talking about their storage service, I'm talking about everything from Amazon RDS to SimpleDB, all the way up to the new stuff in data warehousing, Redshift. They have messaging middleware, they have their own CDN, they have their own payments platform. You can do massively parallel processing with Amazon Elastic MapReduce. They've got great DevOps tools, and they've got great third party supporting them. And really, the other story with Amazon, and you'll see this from our case study, is it's possible as an ISV, or a development services company, or an integrator, to combine Amazon middleware services with Amazon machine images from third parties to build the best freaking SaaS application or cloud solution out there. And that's really what's going on right now in this marketplace, why Amazon is leading so much. They got out there early. Every ISV has to build an AMI version of their server and get it up in Amazon because it's just a rigueur, it's necessary. Google's got a major set of initiatives going on. They've got App Engine for development. They've got the Google Compute Engine, which they just launched. They've got virtual machine orchestration services. And really, if you look at what you can do with your Android device right now in conjunction with the Google Cloud Platform, that's Apple's biggest problem. Apple's biggest problem is the experience you get when you use Google Maps on your Android and you're going somewhere. Okay, so you're going somewhere and you're getting turn-by-turn directions that are coming from the Google Cloud. And when you get within 1 mile of that service, Google pushes you an orthophotographic view of the building that you're going to go see. Okay, that means that the mobile device experience is intrinsically tied to the cloud platform exactly the way you were talking about. And if you can't, as a mobile device manufacturer, a major one, a leader, deliver that kind of experience, you're falling behind. So I don't see that Apple has any choice but to try to keep up with that, but they've frittered away a bunch of years trying to keep up. So, Google has this massive advantage. Microsoft, again, has to leverage Mindshare in the ISV community. They've got to get more ISVs onto the Azure platform as fast as they can. They have created a third-party marketplace. They got to keep working on their tools. And you know they're out of the gates. It'll be interesting to see where Azure is in 6 months and 12 months. I'd like to see some metrics from Azure. You know, how many ISVs have solutions on Azure? How much revenue are they getting from Azure? How many compute instances are running on Azure? How many storage objects? I'd love to see all that information. Haven't seen it. Hopefully I'll get a chance to see it so we can evaluate how well Microsoft is doing. Finally, the other big player in this is, of course, Salesforce. Salesforce has made a fairly deliberate strategic decision not to expose infrastructure. They're exposing platform as a service through specific APIs, but you can't get in the Salesforce cloud a compute instance. You can't just consume storage in the Salesforce cloud. Probably the strategy for why they're doing that is so they can continue to premium price their own SaaS applications. You know, their fear is that if they make their infrastructure available at low prices like Amazon, they're going to start to see CRM versions that are going to erode their margins on their mainstream SaaS business. So this is the game they're playing. They're trying to be the premium priced SaaS application vendor. If you look at prices per seat, I had another deck I did. Salesforce is the highest priced SaaS application per user per month by far in the marketplace. So Salesforce is trying to keep their premium position in SaaS applications. And again, they have this two-track initiative that I mentioned earlier on the platform as a service. They exposed, to a certain extent, their own environment for building their own apps with Force, which is a little weird. It's like a flavor of Java. It's called Apex. Most Java developers can learn it in, 2 to 4 weeks, but it's its own language. It's a little bit of an awkward move, and then they bought Heroku. Apple is probably the one in the most trouble. Apple's building cloud applications and services just for Apple devices, and pretty much focused on consumers. Most of you know what happened with Maps. That was a huge embarrassment, but for me that was a checkpoint and a litmus test of where they're really at. It was their acknowledging that they need to try to compete with Google in certain areas, but it also showed exactly how far behind they really are. The mobile web is a huge threat to native applications. The mobile web, it will be a boon for the Google platform and environment, but it's a huge threat to the device side experience that Apple is trying to promote. Amazon either is preparing or has announced that they're going to be offering free smart devices. That's definitely consistent with their strategy. So Apple is under constant pressure. The real battle here is Amazon against Google. Amazon has a 5-year head start. Google has started one thing which is very interesting, which I think a lot of people should be more interested in, and that is the ability to resell the Google Compute Engine compute instances. So this means a company like RightScale, which does a ton of business on AWS, can get in on the revenue stream of the compute instances if they move some of their RightScale customers over to the Google Compute Engine. So you think about that. So that means if I'm an ISV, right, or a development services provider, instead of building my solution on EC2 and letting Amazon get all the revenue from the compute instance, if I go to Google, they're going to give me, I don't know, 10 cents on the dollar for compute instances. That might not seem like a lot if you're running a small potatoes application, but what if you're running something big and storage intensive and compute intensive? That might turn into millions of dollars of revenue for you. So that's a very significant competitive differentiator there, the ability to resell compute instances on Google Compute Engine and not do so on Amazon. Amazon has got a more mature platform, lots of third-party Amazon machine images in their online marketplace. Server-side virtual machine applications marketplace is very rich and robust. Google's advantages, they're the dominant web app in search and video and maps, and they can expose more and more app dev services. So a few more slides here. I'll get through this, I promise, Ross. So if you look at data and where it's concentrated, I think there are three tiers to look at. Enterprise private clouds, what I'll call a middle tier of vertical exchange private clouds, and you could look at the Affordable Health Care Act and the state-run exchanges as an example of that middle tier of vertical exchange private clouds, and various other manufacturing collaborative clouds for purchasing that are operated. And then you have the big public cloud platforms. So a couple of things. In the public cloud platform space, there are not going to be 100 of these, and there are not going to be 50 of these, and there might not even be 5 when we get done with all the consolidation in our industry. And that's a reality. You can see it already, the concentration and economics of scale that are required to run a successful cloud platform. And you can see that this is true in the scope of the investment that General Electric and VMware have made in Pivotal. There will not be 50 cloud platforms. There will not be 20. There might be 4. There might be 7. And it will get more and more concentrated as time goes on. So that's reality. In the vertical exchange private clouds area, that's actually an interesting area. So, you know, if I was an early stage PaaS company and one of my clients was one of those that he mentioned in my CV, or if I was a hosting provider who's transitioning to offering cloud services, I would try to get some of this, because this is going to be really important. You know, I would try to find a manufacturing vertical, or the healthcare vertical, or the finance vertical. To some extent, you could argue a company like Savvis is exactly headed in this direction for finance. And then on the enterprise private cloud environment, you know, we certainly are running into more and more projects where we're building private clouds that are going to be sold to enterprise organizations and help enterprises basically migrate a lot of what Chris talked about. Legacy infrastructure, legacy applications. Some of them need to be rewritten completely to do this, but a lot of them don't need to be rewritten completely. They can be refactored, they can be replatformed, repurposed partly, and they can take advantage of a private cloud. The last thing is data. So where's the data going to go? The most price-sensitive data is going to go where the economies of scale are the greatest. So big data is going to go in the big cloud platforms. What you'll see in the vertical exchanges is data that needs to be shared within that exchange. And of course, the reason that a lot of enterprises will invest in private cloud over the next many, many, many years is they have private regulated data. And particularly in Europe, but also here in the US, the private regulated data, most enterprises feel compelled to control. They just feel compelled to control it for various reasons. And we don't have any attorneys around, but they could tell us on and on why that's the case. But that's the big driver. So if you look at data concentration by different tiers, this is how I think it's going to break down. Last but not least, this will just take a second, here's a case study. So we have an ISV customer, one of the three fastest growing worldwide providers of mobile enterprise application platforms, Amip. So they sell this Amip primarily in the insurance and finance industry and also into healthcare, and they help mobilize old line of business applications running in enterprise organizations. They had a team in India. The team in India was telling the owner, who is also Indian, that they were going to move his server to Amazon. And they told him they would do it for 4 years in a row. And they didn't get anything done. So he finally said, well, you know, you guys must not know how to do this. And they said, oh, we know how to do it. We'll do it next year. And he said, oh, I don't believe you anymore. You've been telling me that for the last 4 years. And so he hired us. So we put a team of architects on site, and we're very good at this. So we got their server refactored very quickly, and we also built a usage and billing analysis solution for them, and we built the entire server-side solution so that if you're an enterprise and you want to start building a mobilized line of business application, you don't have to bring their server in-house, install it, learn it, and everything else. You can spin up an instance of this in Amazon and start developing your mobile app in like an hour or two. So that's what we did for them. What did we actually create here? Well, we created a fairly sophisticated hybrid technology stack of Amazon middleware and third-party Amazon machine images. So we had some very stringent message-oriented requirements, very high-speed messaging between sort of the transactional part of the system and the data warehouse and reporting part of the system. So we actually created two directions for message queuing. One direction to go into the reporting and the data warehouse, and another direction just basically for the regular transactional part of the system. And in one direction, we used Amazon Simple Queuing Services. In the other direction, we used RabbitMQ. So that's a very interesting case where we combine the RabbitMQ AMI with the platform as a service offering from Amazon for message queuing. We used database technology of two natures. We used MySQL on Amazon RDS. But for the data warehouse, we went column-oriented with Redshift, right? And for the reporting platform, because we have a lot of experience on Jaspersoft, and because you can start in the community edition, and then if you need the enterprise edition, you can move over to it, we went with Jaspersoft. So this is an example of what I meant, why Amazon is in the lead. They've got amazing platform as a service capabilities, and they've got these best of breed third party AMIs. And if you're a smart developer, which is exactly what we are at SoftServe, we're probably some of the smartest in the world. We know how to blend these to build solutions like this. Again, Amazon is driving the cloud marketplace with offerings like Redshift. You know, if on day X you're paying $20,000 or $30,000 per terabyte to Netezza for your data warehouse, and you know you're going to pay that over some period of time, and you can move that data warehouse application to a platform with better performance for, I don't know, $1,000, $2,000, $3,000 a year per terabyte, the economics are compelling for you to migrate. Compelling. And in our case, for this particular ISV, Redshift was introduced in the marketplace exactly when we were doing the design of the billing and usage analysis part of the application. So it was a perfect fit. So we were one of the earliest implementers of a production a data warehouse on Amazon Redshift for this particular project. Very interesting project, very successful project. I know I went a little over my time. I apologize for that. Thank you.
All right, we have a